Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, July 5th, 2020. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the phone with us. Hello, Wombat.
Everyone stand for our special July 4th representation. Ready?
That was yesterday.
God bless America, our home, sweet home.
Yay.
There you go. Yeah. That's a nice bomb my face there.
Our guests today are Dread Pirate Higgs, Red Leader, and George. Welcome all. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break.
And I also want to interject that some of us are not in Knoxville.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
No, true.
You know, like we got me, who's halfway to Chattanooga, and we've got Dread Pirate Higgs, who's with us all the way from British Columbia.
Very good. This is a radio show going out on the Knoxville Airways, so I always want to hit that note that they, if they listen to this on the car radio, home radio, whatever, then there are groups here available that they can join and have a community of free thinkers. Nice. Also, did you know that there was a streaming atheist call-in video show, like TV show? It's been broadcasting here in Knoxville for over 10 years. It's now streaming.
Did you know? I'll check it out. I know it's got good ratings. I know it's got good actors, but. Yeah. And people have been talking about it, and it was great. But like, I'll get the Fleabag on Amazon Prime when I'm ready for it. Right now, I'm just waiting to like get through Boys season 2. There's like a new season of Harley Quinn hopefully coming out. I'll get the Fleabag. I'll watch it. Trust me, I'll get to it. But like, if I was going to watch a bunch of comedians pretend to, or actors pretend to be comedians, I'd rather just watch comedians. In fact, if you really want to watch some comedians, check out Amazon Last One Laughing. It's a bunch of Australian comedians together, and Rebel Wilson. I don't know if you're going to stop me anytime soon. I'll just keep going.
No, I was just going to let you go. See where it went down the rabbit hole.
It goes nowhere every single time. Hey.
Right. No, it's broadcasting, at least streaming here in Knoxville now. It used to be on TV. We switched to an internet format. You can have a little more leeway in what we say. So check out it. We'll tell you more about how to find it on YouTube right after the mid-show break, so stick around. if you'd like to interact with us during the show, go to Facebook and search for our Digital Free Thought Radio Hour page and use the messaging function to set up questions for us or comments, and we'll try to get to them on the show. Wombat, what do you have for us today?
I think we should open up with a really cool talk on congratulating Dread Pirate on becoming a professor. We're going to talk about that more. Well, but before we get into that,
and let's welcome open Boudreaux, up with, by the way.
Yeah, welcome, Boudreaux.
Hey, Boudreaux. Let's
open up with our weekly invocation by our own Dread Pirate Higgs.
All right. An atheist's outlook is sunny, because so much of life can be funny. Without a hereafter, we cherish the laughter and savor each moment like honey.
Oh, very good.
Ramen. All right. So we are going to work on that because I am totally about high energy gigs a little bit. Dread, why don't you open us up? What happened to you recently?
Well, I was just talking to a college administrator for our local college, Selkirk College. It's a small community college that has a number of campuses around southern interior here. And I spoke to them about the possibility of teaching a critical thinking course. And so after we kind of went back and forth a little bit, there's a huge amount of interest from their point of view. And I'm looking at developing, some curriculum and getting this thing out there, coming up in probably October.
So what exactly are you teaching?
Well, so the course would be called Skepticism 1.0, Adventures in Critical Thinking. So it would really just be around developing critical thinking skills, learning, you know, a methodology for examining evidence, and for, you know, sort of discriminating between what is justified in terms of belief and what isn't, and how you discern the two, and how to engage in SE, straight epistemology. Yeah.
Very, very cool.
So I thought that would be an interesting element so that, you know, students each could at some point during the course be the interviewer and the interlocutor. So, again, teaching them a real world skill to, you know, examine beliefs.
I think that's really cool. And feel free to
use, for sure.
Yeah, feel free to use any my media or anyone else's to help exemplify good and bad. I can even give you some special bad videos I never published just to show you like how this doesn't work sometimes. Like,
yeah. Wrong. Well, I mean, it would actually be great to have you know, some guest speakers because it's going to be run virtually.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell me when. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm knocking on that door already.
All right.
George, what do you think? Is critical thinking a real-world skill that should be taught in school? Should we waste time on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Hold on. Let me put my right face on. Should we waste time on this? We got the libertarians. We got them all over the place. They want to get in our faces, use our tax dollars. I say no. We got to stop this. What do you think? Are you with me? Or are you a patriot like me? What do you got to say?
Well, my That's brain doesn't go as fast as your mouth. I'm not a high-speed thinker. I'm more of a reflective type person. So I was only half in jest when I said my brain doesn't go as fast as your mouth. However, I do think that, yeah, it would be very good to teach this in school. And my God, how do we do it? You know, having moved to the south of the U.S. from coastal places, I feel like I'm in another world. I'm on another planet here. And it has taken me 4 years to realize that. It has not been easy. And it's like, I have to understand, yeah, a lot of people around here really do not think the way that I do.
Mm.
How do I bridge the gap, you know? I mean, people automatically make assumptions about me that are not true. Mm-hmm. They believe that I believe in God, for instance.
Yeah, which I get that by default here a lot.
What's that?
You get that by default just being here.
Yes, exactly. I'm just learning that. And you know, people assume not only that I believe in God, but they assume that I'm a Christian.
Yeah. Or that you're a member of their church that just never showed up on Sunday for the last couple of Sundays. You're a Presbyterian of Third Street Baptist, right? Or like, what does that even make? Don't those conflict with each other? It's like, what do you mean they conflict? My religion is entirely rational. Larry, has anyone ever assumed anything about you just from the look of it?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure most of my life. I've been an atheist since like 1973. And I didn't come out of the...
before it was cool.
Yeah. And I didn't come out of the closet for nearly 30 years, so people assumed all kinds of things about me, I guess. And I guess they still do. Strangers on the street, you know, see me go by, and just assume I'm a Christian, because that's the default position in the South, especially in the Bible Belt. But that's one of the reasons I think it's very important for people to come out of the atheist closet. They're going to, or the deist closet, as it were. But until you do, people make assumptions about you that you're religious, that you buy into all this stuff, and even the other atheists in your community will think that you're religious, and that's a real
bummer. So help me out. How does critical thinking help you?
Critical thinking helps me get to reality. It helps me shave away the supernatural aspects of things that have never been proven or been demonstrated. It helps me in a myriad of ways, you know, day to day, especially when you watch TV and see all these claims that people are making about the world that, using critical thinking, you know, is not true.
I want to tell you the news cycle is one of the most lying things. It's all fake news. It's all fake news. It's the worst news ever. It's all fake. You gotta make sure you some get the it. Right news. Whatever I tell you is the truth. It's good. You gotta remember that.
All right.
Boudreaux, I got a question for you. Do you think that we should spend our good Canadian tax money on critical thinking college? And is there a place for that?
I guess the first question is, will they accept their fake money?
Well, I mean, there's no American presidents on the money, so I don't know. Like, what about me, if it's real or not?
Looks like Monopoly.
I heard it's plastic. I heard Canadian money is plastic and smells like maple syrup.
That can't be real.
don't
leave it on your dash. It'll melt.
Oh, no way. That's terrible.
Yeah. I think absolutely. I wish it was something we do here in the States. But, I mean, how could you not use those tools for anything great, you know, science, history, it's a universal tool that'll apply to just about anything. So, and I apologize about my video here. I'm at the socially distanced pool and
socially distanced pool.
Yeah.
Where all the water molecules are 6 feet apart from each other.
Right, exactly.
Tyrone, I didn't really answer your question and I wanted to get back to that. This is George, and what was leading up to was, to teach it in school, yeah, absolutely, but how do we get it into the curriculum when all those people who are on the school board are going to fight it?
Right. Especially in the lower grades. What gets me is, like, we don't really teach evolution in anywhere, anything short of college.
Right.
But a lot of people don't even go to college. And it doesn't get to the general public, and especially concepts of evolution. So, if we can't get that there, how can you expect to get critical thinking there?
Yeah, I'm so lucky. I just watched PBS shows growing up, or else I would have been completely unprepared going to college, being like, evolution, scientific reasoning is like, what is all this? I only have my Bible. It's weird. Would you mind if I got feedback from Dale? Dale, no, do you think we should teach critical thinking in schools? Do you think it's worth the money? And what kind of benefit do you see from a society that teaches that regularly as part of a curriculum?
Well, I guess ignorance would be the alternative, in that we know that's expensive. However, there was one political party that during their platform in 2000, I forgot what year.
You got a zero out of 20 chance.
They had a thing in their platform about teaching critical thinking. And they was addressing that because they apparently, this party has control of the school books in America. And they did not want critical thinking as part of the curriculum because specifically it engendered children questioning their parents and a rejection of tradition. And consequently, if you're going to have someone that doesn't object to a lot of things, you probably don't want them thinking critically. But Dread Pirate, you're the one that's doing the course in critical thinking.
Yeah.
Then I would recommend HATS. Now,
recommend what?
Please HATS? Think responsibly.
He's wearing a happy face. Responsibly.
Oh, I love it.
Please think responsibly. Yeah,
exactly.
You can't force someone to do it. Maybe you can request, but
just got to make it cool.
By the way, there's an excellent show on TV that is all about critical thinking and on a more practical basis, and it's by Penn and Teller, and it's called Bull Feathers.
Close. Is so that still being broadcast?
It's on Hulu. We get it on Hulu.
Yeah, there's no doubt you can find it.
Yeah,
I do like when seeing magicians break down their tricks. I don't like I love the mystique of how magic works, but I also love how much skill is involved in trying to make it look like you're doing magic. So there's like two different parts of my brain that get tickled when I watch a magic show or watch a magician break down the trick. Cause I'm like, wow, that's so technical. There's so much little small details here that involved with making the magic happen.
Tyrone, you're an artist and you're thinking analytically, which I really like. I'm an artist myself and I have done that from an early age, is that we respond emotionally to the good work of other artists.
Mm.
We're drawn in, we're hypnotized like any other member of the audience, but we're also analyzing at the same time. How did he do that?
Right.
Can and I then do like that too, you know?
And I think the biggest thing is, regardless of whatever I saw in the magic trick, whenever I understand how a trick works, it's always, how do I put it, less of a jump of impossibility compared to how what I saw at first. So if I saw a guy like pull a quarter out of a guy's ear, I'll be like, he just pulled a quarter out of a guy's ear. But then he's like, no, I just put it in my hand and I pulled it out. I'm like, oh, well, now I can't see that trick for what it is anymore. But my skepticism is now like at a healthy level, because now I know people can't pull coins out of people's ears and that there's techniques to do it. And that's cool. And I can use that. So that the next time I see a magic trick that fools me, I'll be like, well, he's not doing the car trick. He's not doing the lady behind the curtains. It's not a false mirror. How is he doing this? How is she doing this? That's incredible. Like in my head, it's like, I know this is a trick, but I'm also really impressed by the fact that you still managed to fool me. Like,
exactly. We admire his skill.
Right.
At pulling it off.
Knowing how the trick works, yes, doesn't ruin the magic trick. It just makes it more impressive the next time I get fooled. And I feel like college, the curriculum that Dread Pirates is teaching me, the worst thing that could happen is that people's standard of evidence increase, and that the next time they need to believe something, they're applying more critical thought, and that the only thing that'll come from that is a better world, in my opinion.
My God. I mean, let's say if we have a minister who has a way of working the crowd, and we can analyze the shtick that he's using. That's a Yiddish word.
Yeah.
Shtick. And I don't know how to translate this word.
May the Schwartz be with you.
His act.
You know, it's like, it's stage business. It's
stagecraft.
Yeah. Word. Stagecraft. It's a calculated method of working the crowd. And I was just thinking of, you know, there are ways that Adolf Hitler worked the crowd the same way that a Southern preacher works the crowd. You know, they start off real slow and reasonable and rational, and very, very slowly increase the intensity.
Like a DJ.
Intensity.
Volume.
And by the end of the speech, the guys are screaming.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The audience is just eating up everything that he's putting out and cheering. Mm-hmm. You know, Trump has...
Before we get to Trump, because I know you want to get to Trump.
Sorry.
Brad, do you think you'll teach in that capacity? Will you start slow and go fast? Have you thought this out? Like, do you have a syllabus ahead of time?
No. And it's not a technique that I have used as a performer.
Gary, what do you think?
Okay.
So your question again, Ty?
Yeah, how are you going to teach this class?
Well, it's going to be over probably 15 weeks. We do two sessions a week at an hour and a half, and then break those hour and a halves further down so that each, you know, during each session, there's a time dedicated to the SE part. Mm. So applying practical, you know, applying the skills practically in a sort of virtual class setting. So, you know, it's about, you know, and I think it would have to go at, you know, a general speed in order to keep people's interest. You don't want to start out slow with the idea that, you know, you're going to grab someone's attention and keep it. You got to come out guns blazing, essentially, talking about, you know, logical fallacies, biases, cognitive biases, and all that kind of stuff, really to sort of build the crude toolkit in order to finesse and discover nuance and all that as you move further into the material.
Mm. What kind of material are you going to have, and yeah, basically like that. Like,
well, I've got a couple of good texts that I can refer to, and you know, certainly some online resources. I mean, I'm not creating anything new. It's all out there. It's just a matter of putting it into a package that's you know, not only palatable, it's interesting and tasty.
Dale, you said it looked like you had something you wanted to say. What's up?
I was wanting to ask, when a person after goes through this, what do you hope that this person will use in a practical day-to-day thing? I mean, we do a lot of dealing with splitting hairs and right down to the minutia of religion, but how might someone use it, let's say in, I don't know, car buying or the practical daily exercises?
Absolutely. Like
scam products that are being sold, perhaps?
Yeah, frauds. Yeah.
That's exactly what I see the benefit on a very practical, pragmatic level is, you know, examining some of the claims that we are constantly bombarded with in media of all kinds. Pardon me. And, you know, if it turns out we have younger people that show up to, you know, participate, that would be great. But if we can get, you know, some of the older generation as well, who have children, to whom then they can impart these newfound skills, then, you know, it's carrying it into the generational thing where, you know, we might not be teaching critical thinking in school, but if you teach parents critical thinking, that trickles down into the family and then translates into a younger generation.
I feel like Dredd's just doing his small part to make Canadians even more better than the rest of Americans.
Go, go team! It's like,
Dredd, what is the political or religious climate like where you are?
Oh, it's very Christian. So in the newspaper, every second week, it advertises religious services offered in and around Grand Forks. And 12 of the 14 are Christian. One of them is Buddhist. And the other is the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Nice.
We managed to get in there.
Nice.
Very good.
You're doing God's work.
I would like to mention something about this, getting back to the previous topic where we were talking about the speaker using ways to manipulate their audience. There's a term that's in churches nowadays is called like spiritual manipulation, where the preachers, like a director in a movie, knows how to manipulate the emotions of their audience so that by the end of his, you know, standing and sitting and music and soft talking leading to loud talking and emotional movement, get the people at the end to think that they're actually got the Spirit of God moving inside them.
Right.
Sure.
I mean, it's nothing more than manipulating the emotions of the audience that they're talking to. And it's embodied in that phrase, spiritual manipulation. If a person listening to this broadcast might want to Google it and look at it.
I've also heard of flashpoint gaslighting. Uh-huh. So gaslighting is sort of like subtly lying to a person and making them believe something that's not true for a long period of time. But flashpoint gaslighting is getting one person in a crowd of people who all tell them the same lie. And just through peer pressure, they accept that it's true. And if you're like the lone non-believer in a group of believers and they're all saying you've just been, you know, consumed by the Spirit of God, you can stand up. You feel like you're good. You might feel something where it's just like, oh, I guess I am. I guess if you don't have a rational basis.
I've written an article on my blog about like the movie Old Yeller.
Okay.
Did you ever see that movie?
I read the book.
Yeah. You didn't. Well, did you cry at the end?
I did not cry.
Well, most people, when they see the movie, they cry at the end. And what was the director's point? What was he wanting you to do? He's wanting you to manipulate your emotions over the course of a couple hours so that at the end you have this great cathartic moment.
Right.
And I've that's cried what during preachers do yeah. every Sunday. They manipulate your emotions mm-hmm. to try to do it as much as the director would.
There's also just like in the standard way of talking slowly, but very confidently makes people listen to you. It's mm-hmm. very, very weird. And it's not just used by preachers. It's used by salesmen,
sure.
Politicians, mm-hmm. anyone that's trying to yeah. convey or sell an idea is using techniques to make you appreciate them more than right. you should.
And once you and have Larry, that information, Larry, you can go on with critical thinking.
As you spoke, I was thinking the phrase popped into my head, church as theater.
Right.
You know, it's a performance.
It is. Yeah. Especially in these big mega churches where definitely. They have music and video and dancing a lot of times. I mean, it is a performance.
Dancing? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I actually had an interpretive dance come to a Baptist church I was at one time.
Really?
Imagine that.
Wow, how times have changed. So I've been out of church so much and been reading about the history of churches so much that I've been getting into like puritanical ages where there was no dancing, no frolicking between genders, and like you can't eat certain foods and everything, and you have to wear certain clothes. So the fact that we can now have churches accepting dancers in a Baptist place, it's like history is like falling over itself. It's just like,
well, it was a lone dancer. Cromwell there weren't two of them.
There's a cat. Hey, we're at the bottom of the half hour. Larry, why don't you take us out?
Mm. Okay, this is Digital Free Thought Radio, RNWZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Stick around.
I am I myself alone. Realize I never need to use no one when it comes down to my soul. Freedom puts my faith in none of the above.
Hello and welcome back to the second half of the show. I'm Dotter Five, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, July 5th, 2020, and let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 18th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and you can find us at knoxvilleatheist.org. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one.
No, we do it again, and we all say start one. Larry, do it again.
Yeah, I'm ready. If you don't find one in your town, start one. That's right.
That's good.
Another large free thinking group here in Knoxville, the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years, and you can find them at rationalists.org. Go to their page and click on upcoming events to find out what they're up to. We talked about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, wait a second.
There's an Atheist Call-In TV show?
Yes. Yes.
Why didn't you tell me?
Don't get mad. Don't get heated. Now you can go to YouTube and find it by looking up Freethinkers United Coalition of Knoxville. And we've got 10 years of archives of shows under Freethinkers United Coalition or Free Thought Forum Knoxville. You can look at it, find it either way.
Nice. We got to start
with us on the show. We have the Wombat co-host.
Hey.
And we have guests Boudreaux, Dread Pirate Hicks, and Red Leader and George. Boudreaux dropped out apparently, but
he was okay with his kids. That's all fine. Yeah. That's fine.
And where are we going now, Wombat?
All right. So we were talking before about how Dread Pirate's going to be teaching critical thought in schools, which I think is absolutely fantastic, and we're here to support any endeavor that he's going through with that. Also going to be doing some SE and also talking about the benefits of doing that, and then also how he's going to teach it. How about this? The idea of talking in front of people is always one of those scary situations, but also the weighted burden of these people aren't going to like what I'm going to tell them is like an additional weight, especially if you're like in a predominantly Christian area and you're talking about like things like critical thinking, and people are like, is he making me question my faith? I'm not allowed to do that. I'm just going to not like this guy. Do you have any, like, from you as the human side of a teacher who's trying to do in his best effort teach what is actually a useful skill for like adults, do you have any apprehensions, and what are your current concerns at the moment?
Well, certainly the apprehension is that no one wants to sign up for it, so that would put an end to it real quick. But in discussion with the college administrator, the fact that this is going to be on a virtual platform opens up the audience considerably, so that we're not taking simply from the, you know, sort of 8,000 people locally that might attend the local college, but, you know, now from 100,000 people spread over a number of communities, through a pretty large geographical area. So that eases the sort of apprehension I have of having no one interested in it. I think, you know,
will you also be able to record the classes?
Yeah, I think that would be a reasonable thing. You know,
dude, if you did and made it like a curriculum on YouTube, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I've seen, some other courses, a couple of college professors down in, I believe in Seattle, have a bulge.
What?
Of course. It's called calling bulge, you know.
It's a French thing.
I don't want to swear on the radio here. So.
I appreciate it. Yeah,
but that's what the course is called, and they advertised, or I mean, they just put up everything, all their courses on YouTube. So, and that's even a course I'll be taking some material from. So, yeah, no, I mean, if people are interested in, you know, paying the fee to get a credit so they can hang a little certificate on their wall and say I'm a critical thinker, that's great. But, it's certainly something I would like to see everyone have access to, and as many different formats and as many different people willing to teach the subject as there might be out there, all the better, I think, in the long term.
Dell/Red Leader. Let me throw something at you. We're going to go back in our time machine. We're going to go back in the way, way back machine.
The way back machine.
Yeah, you're now a young, vibrant adult at the start of his life, right after high school. What would this class need to tell you to make you interested in hopping in? Like, how what would it need for you to be like, okay, I'll check this out?
When I was in the military, I did psychiatric work. And in our training, one of the things at that time, the most popular things going on was transactional analysis. I'm okay, you're okay. The games people play. These were fairly well understood concepts. And one of the things we did is for an exercise was we watched soap operas. You would call out, you would label the things that people said, the interactions. And what we found was, is that in soap operas, very, very little of the dialogue is on an adult basis. For the most part, it's someone telling someone, oh, you've got to do this, or someone blaming somebody for their kind of ills. Now, that would be a practical application, but I might suggest watching Fox News, and I believe there would be a lot of bull feathers called.
So you're saying if the class had sessions where they were going to say, we're going to watch the news, or we're going to watch the soap opera, and we're going to break down how these people are talking with each other, you'd
be a practical application. Plus, you might want to consider the commercials on TV.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely.
And, you know, why is this person saying this? Where are they getting this information from? And
how can check it out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be certainly an element I'd like to employ is bringing, you know, the 30-second or 1-minute commercials, and then just having the class around table discussion to break down what the message is, how they're trying to get it across, what they're trying to sell, and the manipulations that they're employing to do it.
You know, I'm thinking about categorizing the techniques.
Yeah.
You know, putting these techniques into containers, you know, like in cognitive behavioral therapy, as I know it.
I really would like to come back to this transactional analysis. Its day came and went for a while, but it's a really great concept, and I would recommend that the viewers take a minute to Google transactional analysis, especially on YouTube, and watch a few videos on it just to get that tool in your tool chest.
So I don't really know what transactional analysis is. Maybe I've done it, but I don't know what the term means. What does it mean?
The last two or three things we said to each other was a verbal transaction.
Oh my gosh. Where's my receipt, Larry? I know you've been taking things from me. Yeah. And I got my taxes to pay too. Oh my gosh.
But if you analyze those, as Dale was saying, you find out that the people are talking to each other like grown-ups, or they're talking to like an adult to a child when you're telling them that they should do something that they're not doing. There's other ways of breaking it down too, but that's the basis of it. It's to analyze the transactions that you're going to. And the best thing to do is keep it in mind when the transaction is transpiring, so you can see what the person is trying to manipulate you into.
Oh, that's so good. I love it.
Yeah, go ahead, Dale.
I might suggest also, as far as critical thinking, to look at some of these political commercials that go on. Now, we know that these commercials work, or they would not be doing them.
Right.
But we've got, you know, people on TV now that are saying that they are 100% for, you know, who, and that they're against this and they're against that. And it's just obviously a way to attack someone's emotions. The voice that's very dramatic, you know, this is going to be the end of our civilization, and so forth and so on. I'm really sorry that with we having this Zoom and all, that we don't have our political candidates doing Lincoln Douglas debate with the time period and all of that, and then just let them fight it out back and forth instead of having moderators and all.
Right.
But I was trying to say that critical thinking, political voting would be a great way to apply it that would benefit not only the person, but your community at large.
Mm.
You know, one thing that occurs to me in this discussion is that here in the U.S., in the state of Indiana, I believe, we have one or two politicians who are attacking academia for teaching critical thinking.
Yeah. Say it isn't so.
Well, do we have to combat this on a larger scale?
I wonder what the benefit on their side is to do this. Is it just to appease voters who look, who might have a chip on their shoulder from a perceived idea that people who go through college or critical thinking courses look down on them, and they're trying to, you know, ingratiate themselves to those people?
It's a reflex.
Or is it more of like a conspiratorial, you know, gray men sort of like a, hey, the dumber we can keep these sheep, the longer we can keep them dumb, the better. Like the less questions they ask, the more fruit we get. Maybe it's a bit of both. I don't know. I feel like I definitely do feel that there is idea of a us versus them mentality, regardless of whatever your classification is. If you're a plumber, you might look down on like people who choose a scientific as a career path, because you in your head think, well, we're plumbers, they're scientists, they aren't us, and they might even look down on us. Maybe it just takes one interaction for you to color all scientists as people who hate plumbers. But everybody needs plumbers, dude. Everyone has toilets. So I was talking on Discord with a guy who was like, I'm a plumber, and I don't think that's a bad career. And I know there's scientists out there who look down on me. I was like, scientists don't look down on you. We need plumbers too. Like, everybody needs a plumber. Like, my job is the one that could be like chopped off the block. But like, we need plumbers and stuff like that. We need miners. Yeah. We know that stuff.
Yeah.
So blue collar people might have the idea of like, hey, critical thought, not that important. And people who have it may not like us as much. And that's very easy for us to be like, okay, well, if that's the case, we're just going to be a block, a voting block. And we're waiting for the politician to be like, I hate people who ask questions and think critically. And they're like, we're going to vote for this guy. And I'm like, how is that a thing?
Yeah.
How is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dredd, there's a couple other videos out there that you might be interested in including in your course. Peter Popoff, you know, the healer. There's a great video out there where, who was it? The
Amazing Randy.
The Amazing Randy.
Oh yeah, he's great.
His radio signals and his ear. Another one is Marjo Gortner. Have you ever heard of him? He was a child preacher, a prodigy that his parents raised him to be a preacher. I mean, from the very earliest age, and they trained him basically to manipulate the crowd. And what's interesting about Marjo Gortner was when he got to be about 30. He realized that he was really hurting people doing this. He was taking advantage of them, basically robbing them using their emotion instead of a gun. And he turned and did an expose of all of it. So you might be able to find that video.
And what's his name?
Marjo, M-A-R-J-O-E. Marjo Gortner, G-O-R-T-N-E-R. Actually, there's a link I'm looking at that I'll put the link in our chat so you can get to it.
Cool, thanks.
Dredd, if you were doing this class in a brick and mortar building, it would have also been cool to have like a taste test with Coca-Cola versus like the generic store brand. And you put them in like just undisclosed cups.
Right.
And you say, we're just going to do a taste test with 10 people who volunteer, who can drink soda. And we're going to see which ones you guys like better or which one you actually think is Coca-Cola, like the brand. And more than likely, it's going to be a 50-50 split, more or less, because they are the same ingredients. It's mostly water plus some sugar, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea is, how is it that people are willing to spend upwards of 8 times more for this sugary water than this? And then you can look at all the advertisements that people have been exposed to since their youth. Coca-Cola being branded alongside Olympic athletes in the background of American Idol songs, like connotated with very successful people throughout a youthful age, and how people understand the jingles and how they like attach it to their national identity. And it's like, you are buying a brand that has been substantially incepting ideas of you wanting it since you were young. Like, you have to realize that like a lot of the things that we're talking about in this classroom isn't stuff that's happening to you right now. It's stuff that's already happened to you. You've come into this class with bias.
Right.
And it's important for you to recognize what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know. That would have been fun.
That's awesome.
Did you know one thing interesting is back when drinks were like 5 cents, and Coke and Pepsi. Coke and Pepsi had a war. This is history. No.
I remember
when they were 6 cents.
I remember going, so this is how old I am. I once in my entire life bought something with a nickel. And so I can say I've done that at least one time, and it was a Tootsie Roll Pop. So I remember that. I remember that.
Well, I remember like, you'd be able to put a penny and a nickel in a drink machine and get a Coke out of it. That was a long time ago. But anyway, Coke raised their price from 5 cents to 6 cents at this time. And Pepsi decided not to, that, you know, it would save everybody 20% of the price of it. But people interpreted it differently. They interpreted that they're buying the better stuff, the more expensive stuff, stuff that, you know, it costs more for
the premium, premium stuff. Product.
And it backfired on Pepsi.
And so, I bet that was Coca-Cola's hand in making sure that perception skewed that way, because they wouldn't just be like, oh, we're so lucky. People think our expensive product is more. It's like, let's twist this.
Spinning it.
Yeah. Spin, super important. I think there's so much to talk about, Dredd. There's no shortage of stuff to cover. I will bring up this though, kind of an important thing. There are of course things that we might be bonded to through, you know, personal identification, like our religion and stuff like that. But there are also recent events that might make talking about critical thinking more emotionally charged than others. For example, people who get falsely accused of doing crimes, like in the news for something. Like, though, while there are people, like, for example, there have been sexual allegations that have happened, and while there are definitely people who have committed them, and I'm happy for the victims to be speaking out, and we should support them, there have also been false accusations as well, and people caught in those crossfires. If someone had a good basis for critical thought, I think what their most important thing would be is a tweet good enough to condemn someone, or should there be a more substantial means of figuring out how we can figure out if something's true or not, and how we can actually go about, you know, applying consequences accordingly, without like just one tweet and you're done. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to talk about things like that in this kind of like particular political environment, this particular age, especially as everyone's been like, you know, sequestered in their home for a while. You got protests going on. Everyone's at like this heightened sense of, I've only known social media for the last 8 months or something like that. How do you start bridging that kind of gap, like across that emotional divide? Because I think most people can think most people are keen with the idea of, this is going to benefit me if I can think more clearly. But if it starts going to an emotional minefield, how do you start to separate?
You know, I've been thinking about, how do I talk with my neighbor across the street who is I've mentioned him to you guys before.
Right.
I think he's an ardent Trump supporter. He feels that Fox News is too far to the left. Hmm. And, he's a nice guy. You know, how do I talk with him? How do I bring this man around?
How do you get past the emotions? Or how do you
do that? And I'll tell you what my way.
How do you do it?
What my intention is, and let me know if you think I'm all wet. Or I thought that the way I will work with him is that I will tell him I stories. In other words, I will tell him about me, and I will be honest. Because I've got to start somewhere. If I tell him, you should this.
Sure.
He's going to turn off. But how can I bridge the gap?
Yeah. Dredd, what do you think? How can we bridge that gap?
It's tough. I guess it's just about tone and composure.
Connecting.
Always, you know, I guess just, you know, if you're reading the room essentially, and you get a sense that someone's escalating or getting triggered, is just, you know, trying to bring it back by tone and composure. I don't know if there's any really good formula outside of that.
See, Larry, I want to make a confession here.
Okay.
Which is
actually a Trump supporter?
I don't know what that is. I am as much a hypocrite as anybody else. You know, at the advanced age that I am now, I can look back over my life and see, whoops, I've made this mistake. I've made that mistake. And the other thing is that even though I think of myself as a critical thinker, I can be suckered like anybody else.
Absolutely.
I can fall for it.
Yeah.
And that usually doesn't make you emotions are behind it.
Yeah, and that doesn't make you a hypocrite. No. Like, no. The path of critical thinking isn't a destination. It's the pursuit.
It's a process, yeah. Mm. And it's true, too, that we're all subject to the Dunning-Kruger effect at some point. Scientists are experts in their fields, but they can be absolute dummies in some unrelated
asking women out.
Yes,
without
exactly.
recognizing it.
Yes, yes.
And I shouldn't say that. There could be women that try to ask men out who are scientists and do a terrible job at that too. So it's it goes both ways. Larry, what do you think about dealing with people who are emotionally charged on a subject, and you're trying to convey like some sort of critical thinking principles? Like,
well, I'm not the best person to.
You're married. What's going on here? And you have a daughter. Have you ever? Every man should pay for my dinner whenever we go on a date. You're like, daughter.
No, we should really go to Wombat for that. I mean, street epistemology is the answer to that. I would think. And me, I'm confrontational. I mean, when it comes to somebody using their emotions to justify their beliefs, I'm just going to start throwing facts at them. I'm going to start throwing questions at them.
Which has its place.
It has its place, for sure. Yeah. But I think, even though I don't use it as much as I should, street epistemology is where it would be at on that. Using the Socratic method to get them to examine their own positions.
Mm-hmm. And Larry, what is street epistemology?
We talked about this. It's just talking
Socratic
to people about
examination.
Well, yeah.
Well, we have to define this for newcomers.
Well, epistemology is the study of how we learn things, how we know things. And taking it to the street and talking to people one-on-one is what Wombat does a lot. And it's using the Socratic method, to examine the methods to which they reach their conclusions rather than attacking the conclusions themselves.
Right.
And I want to throw this out at Dale. Do you think there's a better process to getting to people without emotions getting in the way? Like, what is a good way to talk to someone about an emotionally charged subject?
I don't really have much of an answer, but I do know that Fox News, let's take that show or that channel for example, they have the regular straight news, but then they have their editorials. And you'll find that one of the things they want to do is emotionally charge their audience. Mm. And the best way to move a population is not by appealing to their sense of fair play and decency or love for their fellow man. The best way to move a population is by fear and hate and revenge and protecting yourselves. So consequently, you'll find people that watch shows like O'Reilly and the Judge Jeanine and all of that. By the time they're through with their show, they actually have their adrenaline levels up. The Old Yeller was a movie that tried to tug at your emotions. Fox News, for the most part, tries to hit them with a sledgehammer. So if you can be aware that people are lying to you and they're manipulating you, why don't you look out for that? You might have somebody who says, yeah, I'm a Christian, and this politician over here is talking about how he was saved, after his father died and stuff like that. He might just be trying to manipulate me.
Yeah. It's surprising how almost glaringly obvious some of these manipulative tactics become once you sort of become accustomed to the onslaught that they are in these different media forms and whatnot. Sometimes I kind of shake my head at my own past at having been entranced, essentially put in a fog of these erroneous beliefs. And then now sort of having that veil lifted, looking back and thinking, how did I ever get there? So that's an interesting trip.
Right. I also think it goes back to what Nathan had said before is there's never a bad time to stand up for true things. Right.
Right.
And it's always to your benefit to have a good method to parse true things from false things.
Right.
And if someone says, for example, hey, I think tweets should be all the proof you need to attack and condemn and get people fired and all this, okay, sure. I hear that as a method, but wouldn't it not also benefit you to have a better method in the event that someone does a tweet and they end up attacking someone who's innocent, and we find out that it's innocent. And the next, and the next time someone wants to speak out and they only have Twitter, they can't use it, because when they do, people won't believe them, because we've used that system to attack innocent people before. Like this, it's not in your benefit to just have one system to and sit on it. You always should try to improve it. Even if you have something that kind of works now, that what science is a system that's always trying to improve itself, and it never just says, hey, we're done. We figured it out. So like, what I would just say is we should always take every moment as a learning opportunity to improve.
Absolutely.
To determine true things and false things.
Good advice.
We got at the end of the show already. Dread Pirate, where can we find your stuff at?
Well, right now we are streaming live on my Facebook page at Mind Pirate. That's PYRATE.
Very cool. Yeah. Dale, do you have anything that you would recommend people check out? Maybe future students of Dreads?
The Penn and Teller show, Bull Feathers.
We'll check that out.
They talk about all of these different ways that people get lied to and out and out lying. I took a psychology course, and one of the fellows in the class was mentioning that he was a mechanic, and he would say things to people like, now, children, do children ride in this car?
Sure. Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to do this huge repair. And why would you ask if children ride in it? It evokes the idea.
I get it. It's like triggering parental responses to.
Right.
George, check out Bull Feathers. Don't type that down directly.
It's like BS. Look for BS.
George, what would you recommend people check out?
I have nothing to.
Fair enough. 2 weeks in a row strong. I don't challenge nothing. I believe in it. All right. So, Larry, what would you recommend? Let's chat. YouTube, you're already here if you're watching this. So have a good time. Also, I hope you had a good 4th of July. And, yeah, that's about it. Have a good time.
We're on podcast. Happy. People listen to us on podcasts. So
yeah, you're on the Let's Chat podcast right now.
Go to YouTube and look for Let's Chat.
There you go.
That's Wombat's channel. Hey. And for myself, I have a book out there. It's called Atheism, What's It All About? Go to Amazon and look it up under Larry Rhodes, Larry S. Rhodes. Be sure to check out my blog, which is at digitalfreethought.com. And our radio show archives and atheist songs and other articles are on that page. If you have any questions for the show, send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org, and we'll try to get to them in future shows. And if you're listening to podcasts like them, go to iTunes, Stitcher, luminarypodcast.com, et cetera, and you'll find us under Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. And to wind up the show, I'd like to remind everybody that everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life and join us again next week, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. So goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.